Many miles from where I am to the only lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest. Old pal to me, take me everywhere I want to go, get my transportation free.
Dave Monk, Prairie Monk, WAFT, Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. Today is Sunday, September the 9th. Yes, we're already into the second Sunday of September here at WEFT. This is the Prairie Monk Show, WEFT's weekly look at rails, trails, greenways, everything environmental, and whatever else Dave has been up to lately.
And it has rained. But first of all, let's look at Pledge Drive. We're very fortunate to have WEFT and, in our case, associated with Banner Public Television. And we have a camera, so, and David helps to put pictures into this program to make it a television program, and then it goes up on YouTube. It costs to do that. It costs to have volunteers who are out there looking at equipment this week especially. We have tower problems. We really would enjoy your donation to keep this community action program online. This Thursday, rather wonderful WEFT Associates meeting. I thought it was very good. It was at least about 40 people there. There was unanimity. There was concern about the WEFTFest coming up on the 16th, whereas David has been gathering up musicians, and other people have been doing so too. There are posters that have been prepared. Joan Dixon was there from the Community Foundation to check with WEFT, because the foundation has given equipment for a relay to the tower, and she has also been working with the administrations, the rules that go with not-for-profits. And she spoke very well, I thought, and it was nice that she was there to talk to WEFT. New people elected, old people that had been here for a long time. Gina was re-elected, and Barbara was unanimously elected. We really enjoy her being around for many, many years. This is elected to the board, less distinct from the associates. So think about us as we do our Sunday deal, and try to eventually put this information into the Urbana Free Library. So the weekend was dominated by rain. The front has passed through, but it caused a little bit of consistent disturbance. The farmers market was characterized with a lot of no-shows. David went to Kempton to the Gardner Prairie, and I wondered if you had rained out or...
No, in fact, the rain stopped just as we got there. Ryan, who's the coordinator of the entire Master Naturalist program, was right on the verge of saying, calling a rain out because of the rain, but it was just dying off enough that he said, oh, come on out. It's about an hour and 15 minutes from here to get there by way of the Paxton exit off of 57. And yes, by the time we actually got to Kempton, it had stopped raining, and we had several hours of indoor stuff to do. So by 1 in the afternoon, when it was actually beautiful for going out and walking through this amazing, amazing prairie, because it was all overcast. So you didn't need, you know, any rain gear or anything like that, but he had beautiful vision of all of this stuff. I was practicing all the names of the plants. This is lead plant. This is compass plant. I think I now know the difference between compass plant and dock, because I saw them over the course of 3 hours. I saw them so often, I can say, oh, tell me, Dave, is dock the only one of the two that has a yellow flower?
No, they both of them have yellow
flowers. Oh, plants. Rats.
They're both... Both a composite. That means that they have a capitulum or head with florets that attract bees on the outside and tube florets in the middle, like a sunflower, so that for nectar and for pollen.
Okay, but anyway, so yes, I was hoping that boy, this is getting off the beaten track. So at least I think I can tell the difference between those and some of the grasses, but it was just stunning to walk through all of this stuff and see some of the most rare, you know, it's like if you see one of these things growing in a prairie or in an area, you know that you're in a pretty good prairie, because if there was any disturbance in the soil, it wouldn't be there anymore. You know,
yes, especially indicator plants like lead plant and
so it was
compass root and
just
and
stunning.
The dock and the compass plant grow fairly well.
Quinine everywhere. I kept seeing it, thinking, "Oh, this is New Jersey tea." Unfortunately, they say that the little New Jersey tea that they had up there has died off, so they don't have it anymore. This is beginning to sound like you when you're talking.
That was interesting, because I called up a Prairie Moon. Where we deposit our seed, and they have grown New Jersey tea, ceanothus. They take shoots, I think, rather than growing from seed,
right?
And so they have grown enough that they can supply the needs for. New Jersey tea, which is a fairly popular plant for a good prairie. And it's a little more rare than others. And it is our only shrub. And it has a huge root. If you dig up a New Jersey tea, it's got red roots. So sometimes they're called red root. But they're very extensive roots, and they're just a shrub, very, very low shrub. And we've been collecting that sort of seed at Camp Creek.
I don't think that this is actually considered private. I don't think it's... I'm not sure if it's private property. I'm almost tempted to say if people really want to see the most stunning thing in our area as far as prairie is concerned, go on up to Kempton. It requires taking some county roads and things like that. But as long as you stayed on the cut-grown grass parts of the thing, I would think anyone who wants to could go up there and have a look. And the Loda... cemetery is up there. We didn't have a chance to go there, but I understand that's another fun thing to take a look at, is to see some
prairie. Three little cemeteries around: Prospect Cemetery, Pellville Cemetery, and Loda. There's three little cemeteries that have up to, in some cases, 80 species.
So yes, it was a fun afternoon.
So the Gardner Prairie is a planted prairie, I think.
Right. Back in the days, 1970-something, he decided, you know what, we've got all this land around here, we're going to start planting seeds. And there was a rail bed nearby, and so he started transplanting seeds from within like a half of a mile along the rail bed and started putting it in this area. And gradually over the last 45 years or so, he's turned this into a pretty authentic, you wouldn't believe how many pages of different plant types are in this prairie. It's pretty amazing.
Yes, and he has them distributed. And you can distribute them according to their likes. For instance, Culver's root likes to be damp. Little blue stem likes to be dry. Mm-hmm. So if he knows his soil types, so they're spread accordingly.
And he's a retired dentist, so that just shows you don't need to have a degree in this stuff if you just have the determination. There were two P's, patience and persistence. Are kind of the same thing, aren't they? Anyway,
okay. But,
I had fun.
You're doing this with the master gardeners. Would you
master
like to
naturalist.
Say something about master naturalist?
You know, I was thinking you should get Ryan in here. I don't mean to interrupt your show. So, yes, if you ever watch WILL TV, every once in a while there's a gardening program that's run by, as near as I understand, some local graduates, maybe even instructors in the master gardener program that's looking at cultivated plants. There's a comparable program for people who want to look at natural stuff, plants, animals, weather, and things like that. And it's the Master Naturalist Program. And after 8-10 years of working with you, Dave, I was disappointed in myself not knowing the difference between, you know, I didn't realize that the flat leaves of Doc were part of that big stock thing was also Doc too. I just had never seen the elephant ears, and I thought, oh, that's what Doc is. And I finally decided, okay, I can work my work schedule out to be free on the day one on Tuesdays to sit in a classroom and then go out into the field for the next 10 weeks or so and learn about the animals and about the plants. Yesterday was the one day to concentrate on prairie. The rest of it is going to be off. Prairie will be part of it, but not the sole focus until the end of October. So I've got, wow, 6 more weeks of this and just having so much fun.
Yes, I think it's very good. We did something like this with reading the landscape at Parkland College for a long time. It's now been much more formalized, and that's good. That's where we get to inspire things and help them on their way. The rain rescheduled the Pocket Prairie. We were going to take this weekend to remove the last little piece of Pocket Prairie that is facing Chestnut Street. It's a small area, probably about 15 by 25, and it's needed. We were promised that it would be retained, but things changed. So the walkway that goes between Market Street and Chestnut is going to be a little steeper because it starts later after the building. So they need this prairie space to do a dogleg for wheelchairs to be able to come around and have adequate slope to get up onto the court or beer garden at the top. It's been interesting to watch. The pour, tap, craft beer bar has opened. The building itself is very nice, and it puts into action a building that's been vacant for many years, using some tax increment financing money, and it will bring activity to this part of Market Street. The beer garden is not quite finished. It has had to have electricity put out so that there will be a bandstand at the end. And the area has been taken down by 4 feet to add a little privacy, and then to put on top of that gravel and then some bricks to usually absorbent bricks that will allow water to move through them and drain properly, and that's been quite a task. They're always sitting out there too, so you'll be able to take on your computerized tap or beer. You pull your own beer after having selected which one with a 2-inch samples, and then you do enjoy gaming, or you go out into the beer garden and enjoy camaraderie. And two relatively young people from Peoria doing this, they have a successful bar, in Peoria, and they thought they'd try this one. And so we wish them well. We're a little disappointed we've lost our 30-year-old Prairie that did a lot of teaching, but it's going to the Second Street Big Dig or detention pond. And the rain, indeed, I've been watching it. And the boneyard took on flood stage. And yes, it covered up some of our prairie, so we couldn't put the prairie from Chestnut Street to the Big Dig because the equipment, high hose and the like, would make a real damage to the area, and it would be very muddy and awkward. So we're hoping that it dries up, and by Wednesday we hope to move again. We might even do it before then. So we could use some volunteers to help dig in the plants. We do have two people from Farmer City, and it's interesting that they know the railroad bed is being taken out between Farmer City and Bloomington, and that there's a lot of prairie there on Route 150, and we hope that it doesn't get mown, that it will be preserved, and it's working with people who come and help us, that we get the message around. It's a little by little. But often that strip of prairie has been mown. We really need to convince people that mowing isn't necessarily needed. It looks good for people who have that sort of mind, but it takes out a lot of your genetic species that we need for future biochemicals and the like that we don't know about now. And we also, people need to be able to look at their heritage prairie and like Dave says, you know, this is Compass Planet and this is Doc, and Compass Planet comes a little sooner and Doc comes a little later and is a little more gentle in its stems. The Compass Planet is strong and hard and hairy and resinous, and it's a different cat. But they're in the same Silphium family, so getting to know them is a friendly thing. You have to watch that you don't plant too many of them because they can take over if they like. They're a little on the aggressive side. So, yes, if you see them on the roadside, you know that this is a piece of prairie. And then you look around to see whether you have lead plant or calvos root or rosin weed or other plants that we might mention. If we get to know if we can take it on Monday, we may like to ask some of you for volunteer help with that task. We'll let you know when we get a new date. While I'm at it, I'll just say that we've been picking seed at Seymour, and basically New Jersey tea or ceanothus, and it's timely to do now. There's interest coming from a lot of different people. We will have, on the 21st, we'll have a homeschool group there to pick seed and to deadhead reed canary grass and to take out plants like honeysuckle. These are weed creatures, and there are more trees than there should be because they take advantage of the fact that the place has been drained. These trees would never have been in a prairie had it not been that the farms around and the railroad lines are drained. It allows the plants to get adequate water, but also to have not have totally wet feet. There's another volunteer who is with David at Ninton, a master naturalist program. He's a retired dentist, and Lee Gauger. He lives north of Whiteheath near Galesville, which is sort of about probably 5 miles north, and he has been observing that we have 4 miles of prairie that we bought that does have an easement for power lines, and the prairie underneath was absolutely wonderful, but that power line was maintained and the trees were removed by hand, by axe, by chainsaw. But now the railroads and the power companies have discovered herbicide, and they mainly use Roundup, which is a glyphosate, which is mainly denies trees from growing for about 3 years. So they're specific for broadleaves. The grasses grow, so we have good grass prairie, but we've lost most of the understory prairie plants. And part the problem there is that we need signage. We have dockets which explain that we have prairie underneath these sites, and we religiously remove the trees so that there will be no shorting to the power lines. But the Wright Company, which is the subsidiary for Ameren that deals with landscaping, comes in and herbicides, and that's unfortunate. Fortunately, they've gotten to realize that we do have an area, especially near to Camp Creek near Seymour, which is very valuable. And we do have signs on it. And we have another piece near to Whiteheath where the power lines take off and go in a different direction, so there's no need for herbicide. So Lee Gauger is interested in taking out invasive trees from that site and tidying it up, and that's very, very helpful. We appreciate that sort of interest and activity. He, along with David, is doing the master naturalist, and he also has a plot of land in Mason County. And Mason County is interesting because it's kind of sandy and gravelly, because when they continental glacial areas warmed up and the glaciers moved north, they left waterways like the Illinois River that were fairly sandy and had very fine-grained loess in them, and that loess and sand blew across the country, and it's heaviest in sand adjacent to the river because the sand falls out sooner. So the species in Mason County are sort of on sand dunes, and there's good agricultural land too, but Gleason, a very early botanist, found this area and defined it, and it's been rather wonderful, except now it has discovered irrigation. So if you have a sandy soil and you irrigate it and you put enough fertilizer on, it's like growing your plants in a petri dish. They grow well. and they grow early, and sometimes if you're lucky you can get two crops. So that's very, very expensive on the underground aquifer that comes through. You have to know that some of this land has been moved and shaken for many, many centuries. And the old Ohio River used to go across, and I think the Mahomet Aquifer is actually some of the remnants of the river that was before we had an Ohio River that went down to Cairo and met up with the Mississippi and then went to the Gulf. So Lee is very interested in working with his own 40 acres, and he sent me some photographs there. And this is how we get to know people, so that generally there's a overall understanding of prairie. Let me just look here. I make notes, but I don't always read from them. I know. We're going to have iHelp on the 22nd. The homeschoolers will be coming on the 21st, but on the 22nd we'll have iHelp people, and they can be very, very helpful. This is a university where they have a day between 10 and 1. People come and work in shifts on a site. And some of those people will be going to the Champaign, Havana, and Western Railroad, which we're putting in between the Monticello Railroad Museum and Seymour. This is being put together by a five-year-old group that is seriously looking at doing this to get trains into Champaign, historic trains. So Tom Scott is a railroad engineer, and he's busily doing that. So he'll take a bundle of iHelp people at Whiteheath, and they'll make sure that they have a 25-foot easement on the rail ballast. And we have to watch to see that we don't have too much herbicide there. We don't have bonfires of vegetation burned on the railroad bed, which is growing prairie already. So it'll take us years to get this around to Seymour, but getting it underway is important because we're trying to preserve another 7 miles between Seymour and Bonneville and Staley in order to get trains into town. Not easy, very challenging. You have to work with the Surface Transportation Board in Washington, and that's more or less the Federal Transportation Department. You have to work with Canadian National, which owns the rails between Seymour and Bonneville. You have to work with the elevators with the hope that they may also use that restored railroad track. And it's we're at the moment, Tom Scott is writing a proposal for a Google RFP, request for proposals for community action, and there'll probably be a million applicants, so you have to have a very good proposal. It has to be succinct. It has to relate to how does this project relate to the community at large? What is the regional benefit of it? Who will get to use it? Who will get to run it? How does it relate to the Railroad Museum? How does it relate to the city of Champaign? Where do you park a train? There's a whole lot of questions there. And that's going on in that general area. I want to add that we have a problem out there. It's been fairly mild-mannered in a way, but Right now, there are four-wheel vehicles on our prairie. They don't just run straight. They tend to want to move around, and they are very destructive. They haven't used it for a little while. So once again, it gets into the signage business. Signs are expensive. A good, substantial sign that's going to stay for 3 years costs about $200. And you don't just shovel it into the ground because you're wanting to put it on a railroad ballast where there's existing gravel. And it's not easy to dig in that sort of situation. So somehow we eventually have to raise money to do that sort of thing, to let the company that does the herbiciding know that this is a valuable place and it's relatively undisturbed soil and was relatively undisturbed prairie plants. You also have to remind them that they should not be herbiciding in a wind greater than 15 miles an hour. That means you lick your index finger and you put it up in the air and you just get used to 15 miles an hour and know that you don't spread this herbicide onto areas of the right-of-way that's like 100 foot wide that still do have prairie on them. So it ain't always easy to be preserving prairie. I often encounter people who are planting trees, especially as we go into trying to do green things in both cities. It's not easy to. I almost at the climate change meeting, I almost said when it was recommended that people plant trees, they could plant prairie too. It's not always easy because prairie needs a lot of light. So if you have a tree, you need that type of prairie that grows where there's a shade. So if you do that, you take Joe Pye weed and those creatures that grow in the edge timber. And we don't have a lot of nursery material of that nature. So if you plant a prairie plant like Big Blue Stem under a tree, it will eventually become an annual. That means it dies at the end of the year instead of being a perennial. So not easy. We have a few weeds. One that I was taking out is honeysuckle, and reed canary grass is very dominant and likes wet places. And about the only thing you can do easily is to decapitate it or take the fruiting body off so it doesn't spread. So we also have trees we need to do something about. We've let the sheriff know that we have a prairie, and the sheriff people, the associates, know that we have land at Camp Creek and land at Rantoul that is valuable, and they can watch to see that people don't dump on it and that they don't run through it and ruin it. You don't have to be too dramatic about it. The staff knows more or less what goes on in each little community, and they have a rough idea who is doing things with what. The vehicles we have had running through the prairie are four-wheelers, not two-wheelers. You can tell the difference between the tracks. But we have some pictures of the plants that are right there where the vehicles have been operating. And perhaps if we have time, we might put a link at the end to say that these are some of the plants that David has been talking about and that other volunteers will like to see and work with. The weather affected the climate change. This was going to be a parade in Scott Park and across the world. There are perhaps 90, I think, I forget the number, but after the event, a report was made on WEFT, or on my email, I guess, to say that there were countless thousands and thousands of people across the country and across the world that were standing up for, it was called RISE, stand up for climate change, jobs, and justice. The two merged some, so they had their meeting at the Disciples Foundation Church on Wright and Springfield. Very small place for a lot of people, but there were booths there for healthcare consumers. There's with environmental issues, energy bundling, where you can the cities can go ahead and do some joint buying of energy. There were solar panel people there, the Prairie Rivers Network, the Salt Fork people who are worried about coal and coal ash that has been left without linings. You can have coal ash preserved by putting visqueen down so that it doesn't leak, but these coal ash bins are not like that. They leach into the rivers that are our only clean rivers, and that material leaches its sulfur and its lead and its arsenic into the Wabash and into the Mississippi and into the Gulf and creates a dead zone. So they were there. Students for Environmental Concern was there, and they are interesting in that they're here during the student year, but in the summer when a lot of things are growing, they're at home and or other places. And I think it flows over, but it makes it a little easy to have them to administer a prairie like on Savoy Route 45, because they just aren't around in the summer months. But there are big signs to vote and to sign petitions and to donate. And both mayors, Mayor Marlin from Urbana and Mayor Finan from Champaign, both listed a whole bunch of things that the cities are doing to encourage environmental issues that do involve climate change. And it also involves working with groups that don't always have jobs. Can people have jobs that are environmentally oriented? For instance, can you have people who repair things? Can you have businesses that don't do like what's happening in England at the present time, where agencies are destroying fashionable clothing because they don't want it to be out there to make it cheaper? So there are these sorts of arguments that go on, and so the environmental issues are having a time to think about how you can use secondhand material, how you can live in a smaller house, You don't have to have a huge house. How you can be aware, how you can walk around and find out some of these things that David is talking about with the master naturalists. What do you do for exercise? Do you exercise in front of a game machine? It's just while we were on the comment about the exercise, there's a new organization called Brainstorm Escapes. It's just on the other side of the railroad line here, very near. David gets into gaming. This is where you get a group of people together, and they're met with a challenge, and they have to spend 60 minutes to get out of a room by solving the problem. And this is very common for engineers especially, because you have to decide what to do with this particular problem. So this is a gaming group that works with the idea of coming together to get out of a hard situation, and there are situations that are various levels. So just watch that. It's very new. It's where there used to be a Thrifty Nickel place, and they've moved elsewhere. So it's new. Let's stop for a moment and say something about a pledge drive, because we need to. And so, David, can you say something about
it? Sure. Probably people who are listening to this program are fans of natural areas, and so that's your incentive to make a pledge here, because you know that you're helping to keep WFT on the air so you can hear the Prairie Monk program every week. But keep in mind, that's 1 hour out of the week. 24 times 7 is 140, 168 hours in the... I probably just did that math wrong. No, that's about right. Anyway, so that's a lot more hours than the time that Dave is on. Dave is on a really small fraction, way less than 1% of the time that we're on the air. The station is here. That's what you're really paying for. You get to hear your favorite programs, but guess what? You're paying for the diversity. Ha! Straight back to Prairie. Prairies would be really bad if they were monocultures. Here, this is Lead Plant. That's the entire prairie. There you go. It's all, you know, a big blue stem. Well, it's very pretty. Is that really what you want for 10 acres? Just that? You want the diversity just for the appearance and for the quality of the prairie. So that's what WEFT is all about, too, is the diversity of the program that we bring you. You may like some things better than others. Well, guess what? There are fans for loud rock music. There are fans for avant-garde jazz. There are fans for traditional jazz. We have, I can't tell you how many different people who do the blues here. Quite a few of them like electric blues. Well, there is always somebody around here who prefers the old stuff. Every Tuesday, we used to have a guy who would drive here from Peoria. That's a long ways away. And he probably never played an electric guitar-based blues tune. He must have. It's a 2.5-hour program. So this station is diverse, and that's what you're paying for when you make a pledge here. You're paying for the things you already like. You're paying for the things that other people like. And if you don't like those things, well, two things you should know. If you listen to those things that you don't think you care for, give them some time. Over a course of weeks, maybe you'll start to understand the details about them that make you appreciate them. You may not love them and tune into them religiously every week, but at least you'll kind of understand them and you won't dislike them. And the other thing, if there is music that we play that you just, time after time, every time you hear it, you just don't get it. Why is it on the radio? I can't stand this. Well, you should appreciate that. That we have stuff that goes beyond your tolerance, that gives you an idea of how diverse we are. We have stuff you just cannot get your brain around, and you just cannot appreciate. So we don't have people standing by to take your call. Normally, you can call 217-359-9338. You know what? These days, quite a few people go to our website and make their pledges there. So our website is weft.org. If you care to, just go right there, and all of the details are online for you to make a pledge. If you make a pledge of $90.10 or above, we have some great thank you gifts for you.
The interesting thing is that many of the airshifters are experts in the genre that they're running. And so that makes it very interesting. Continuing with some of the natural history things we do during the week. This week I took a survey through. I do this fairly regularly to look at the rail bed, the 33 miles we have in the Monticello area, just to see that there's no drainage problems, there's no invasive problems. And this week I went from Seymour to Clinton, and I have access to that corridor with section roads. So you go to a section road and you walk in, and I've taken video of that. It's very comforting to know that most of the adjacent owners have left the bed intact. Its original soil is intact, and the plants are not necessarily there, but they could be. A lot of this area is mown. There's a feeling in farm communities that the weedy-looking things that are along the railroad right-of-way are going to harbor insects that will move into the monoculture nearby, which is not exactly, according to the research, insects that need a prairie plant that's specific for, like, monarchs, like milkweed, then they're not going to go for corn or for soybeans. It's very unlikely that mowing is going to help preserve that sort of movement of disease. It's also something that people feel they need the neatness and tidiness. And prairie, especially, is not neat and tidy. So I videotaped along there, and I also used my cell phone to make a record. And I was very pleased to know that most of it is intact and could be restored. 5 miles of it will join Clinton Power Plant Lake with Weldon Springs State Park. And some of you especially need to know these sites. And I can't really, some of it is 40 miles away from town. And it's quite a commitment to go out there and discover what's there and what could be. You need imagination. Speaking of imagination, we have a few minutes left. I want to say that the idea store is moving. And the idea store has been over by the railroad line, and it's going to move to Lincoln Square, where the Art Mart has moved out. And so they're taking quite a considerable increase in space. It's been very, very popular. It's popular throughout the country. There's probably about 30 of these idea stores, and they take in a lot of interesting junk, and people who are artists love to go there. I can remember looking at a young child who was putting his hands into leftover little pieces of metal that were ball bearings. And just the feel of it is interesting. And so... It's been inspirational, and we wish them the best of luck with what they're doing. They're close at Lincoln Square doing painting and putting things into action. It'll be a month before they get there. I suspect they may have some sales before they move, just so they don't have to move too much stuff. But it will be a new place. And the funds go to the Champaign and Urbana school district. So it has if you spend your money there, it's good. So I think we're
5 minutes, four actually.
Oh, okay. Well, Some of this, perhaps I'll say a little bit more about the corridor. We need people to know about that corridor. There are parts of it, like outside Allerton Park, that could perhaps be annexed to other agencies. But most of it is sitting there waiting for the opportunity to arise. In the case of the Kickapoo Trail, we took out a concept of 25 miles of trail at the time of abandonment, and that generated $12 million for the whole 25 mile as an interim trail use. We did the same sort of thing, but not with the surface transportation, not with a, it was before there was a Rail Banking Act, so that the trail means that people can come back with a railroad if necessary. It's fairly unlikely because the railroads are mainly concerned with major lines from Los Angeles to New York or Los Angeles to Chicago and Michigan. These are often on small lines that were obsoleted by road transportation, and they're small, so a major train wants to link up with 125 cars or even more than that. They want stuff that moves between hubs, one in Chicago and one in Memphis in our case, about 300 miles apart. So these trails are very popular. There's about 30,000 miles of them now, and they go through interesting territories. Our territory is kind of monocrop out there, but you can stand on the railroad bed and you can see an almost uniform horizon with not a tree or a building, and you really get the feeling of being in the Midwest in a flatland, which is the outwash plain to a glacier at one time. So I photographed that, and we need places where we can show that, where we can speak. So just recently I was invited to be speaking to the Historic Museum about this, and one of the things I want to ask about is, how did you get to do this, or how did you get to be involved in this? And I don't usually like to do that because I like to talk about what our project is. But I can see that some of that is important for people in the future to be inspired, to be aware, and to do their own thing. And sometimes that's hard to do. WEFT is doing its own thing. Okay, it's nearly time. We will hope you'll give us some pledge money. And this is, we'll be out there immediately. So if you call in now, that would be good. And so this is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WAFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board, and the views and opinions expressed are solely those of the speakers and no one else. And as Dave just said, now you've got lots of people around here. This would be the most spectacular time to give us a call, 359-9338. I dare you to phone and use up all three of our phone lines. Go ahead, 359-9338, fly WEFT. And Dave, why don't you give them your phone number, because you're looking for people on Monday, you said?
Yes. 840-1911. 840-1911. 1911.
There you go. And I'll put in two plugs for WEFTFest. First of all, listen next week. This show will be on the air.